From WBOI Fort Wayne and Monstrous Regiment Media, this is Women Are Fort Wayne, a podcast highlighting the amazing things women are doing in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the struggles we face, and the tools that help us rise. I'm your host, Stephanie Gottesman, a Fort Wayne transplant and entrepreneur, getting to know my new home through great conversations with inspiring women. Join me and get to know things you may not have discovered about our charming Summit City. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Women Are Fort Wayne. How are you holding up? I hope that you and your families are staying healthy and hopeful in the midst of this global pandemic. We are still practicing social distancing, so our next few episodes will be recorded using Zoom. We apologize in advance for the slightly lower sound quality, but we're sure you all understand the need to take some extra precautions. We're also going to be focusing our next few episodes on the impact COVID-19 has had on Fort Wayne women. Today, I'm thrilled to actually be starting the show with my co-founder, Tracy Henning-Kohlberg. Hi, Tracy.
Hey, Stephanie.
It's so great to have you on the show with me.
It's so good to see your face.
I know, it's been way too long.
Mm-hmm. I miss recording in the studio and everything, but more than that, I miss seeing your face.
So today's episode is centered around how our education system has been impacted by this crisis. We'll be speaking with several different women who have their own unique perspectives on how education has adapted to the COVID crisis. For those of you who don't know, Tracy is just wrapping up her final semester as a history major at PFW and is also the mother of a very high energy 5-year-old who normally attends Southwest Montessori as a pre-K student. So I don't think I've had the opportunity to say this to you yet. We're going to be saying it in the live stream, which everyone will have heard by the time this airs, but congratulations on finishing up your history degree.
Thanks. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long have you been working towards that?
You know, I actually went back and looked at my transcript so I would know exactly when I went back to school, and it was fall of 2005.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's so this has been a 15-year journey for you.
Yeah, that's over half of my kid's lifespan, like well over half of Aiden's, my older son's lifespan.
That's incredible. And Aiden is 19?
He's 19.
He's 19.
No, he'll be 20 this year, but yeah.
So when you started your bachelor's degree, you had a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he had just turned 5. The semester that I started, and he wasn't in kindergarten until the fall after that, and a single parent on top of it and working full time.
That's quite a set of challenges to overcome in your pursuit of education, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
So you faced quite a few challenges on your road to this milestone. Would you share with our listeners a bit about your educational journey?
Yeah. I made the decision to go back to school because as a single parent, everything for my child came from me. And I figured the best thing that I could do for our future was to get an education. And I was really fortunate. I had my parents who were super supportive and involved in everything that went into me raising Aiden. But in the fall of 2006, my mom had a double brain aneurysm that killed her in a matter of days. So kind of out of I know, right? That face you're making right now. It's actually really hard for me to even say that without like getting to the point of crying about it. And it's been 14 years. It'll be 14 years this fall. So that was rough because my mom was my full-time childcare provider. She also watched Aiden for me in the evening so I could do night school. And in 2008, my dad died in a car wreck. Mm-hmm. Losing my parents.
Thank you so much, Tracy. That is an incredibly huge challenge to have faced, and I can absolutely feel how hard that was for you.
Thanks.
And I'm over here trying not to cry myself, even though I've heard the story before.
I know. I've told it so many times, but it still hits me really hard. There are still so many things that I wish my parents were around for, but losing people who hold your life up like that makes everything so much harder. I was just really lucky to have a solid group of friends who really looked out for me in that time period. One of my friends, who was actually my math tutor at the time, paid for Aiden to be in after-school care because he was like, you've put too much work into this and your education is too important and I need you to keep going. And so I did. But shortly after my dad's death, I started experiencing what I would later find out were early flare-ups for multiple sclerosis. And in 2012, I spent almost 2 weeks in the cardiac ICU because of stress-induced cardiomyopathy. And like in layman's terms, the blood pressure in my heart, instead of like going in opposite directions, was pushing up against each other. And if you ever see like a video of what this looks like, it almost looks like your heart is exploding. I also lost mobility from my chin down to my toes for almost a month.
Wow.
Which was terrifying.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I had no idea if I was ever going to get out of the hospital, truthfully. Like 3 days after I was admitted to the cardiac ICU, I was having breathing issues. And so this is one of the things where I really feel for anyone on a breathing machine or a ventilator of any kind right now, because I have personally experienced it. It's awful. It is absolutely awful. Like, it pulls air out and pushes air back in, and it doesn't do it in like a natural rhythm. So like, if you're trying to fall asleep, it's really hard to do because you have this machine that's like ripping and pushing, and like, it just doesn't feel natural at all. And I like gained some movement back from my hands enough where I was like trying to push this mask off my face, and the nurse threatened to tie my hands to the side of the bed because she was like, you need this to survive. So twice in 1 week, facing life-threatening conditions. Again, really lucky because I had an amazing group of friends. Andrew was on my team, he was my boyfriend at the time. He's my husband now. His mom stepped in and she's a CNA. She knew exactly what to do when she got to the hospital and was just so soothing and so giving and loving in exactly the way that Nora is. But I took a break from school for obvious reasons. I got married. I had another baby. I moved to the Pacific Northwest. And when I came back here in 2016, I had already made it a goal of mine to finish my degree. My pregnancy with Arthur was really rough. And in order to not go totally stir crazy, I watched a lot of history documentaries, as one does, and realized that was all I wanted to do, was study history and be a part of it. And I was really determined when the time came to like get my degree. I'd worked so hard for it already. I was like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna finally finish it, get my history degree. It's what I wanna do. And there have been challenges along the way at this point, but nothing ever feels as bad as the things that I overcame earlier in my education.
So when you came back to the history department, wasn't that around the time that you decided that you wanted to pursue grad school also?
Yes. So this is actually one of my favorite moments from getting my education. I met with Dr. Lifshitz, and she was pregnant at the very end of her pregnancy and packing up her office and getting ready to leave for her sabbatical. And here I am, this student on academic probation who she has no idea who I am. And I sit down across from her, I'm like, I want to go to grad school. And like her face, she was just like, you have to kick butt. Like, if you want to do this, if you really want to do this, your professors need to know you. You need to stop taking online classes. You need to show up and you need to kick butt. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And she was gone. Like the next semester, she was on her maternity leave. And I went ahead and got all A's in my classes, came off of academic probation, was president of the history club, and was working as a student worker for the department. And I met with her because she was my advisor. And like, I kind of like raised my eyebrows at her, like, how am I doing? And she was like, you're doing great. She was like, I've been keeping tabs on you. I've been hearing about you. And I think you're doing a great job. And I didn't have Dr. Lifshitz as a professor until this last semester. And I've actually really been privileged to work with her on several other projects. But I told her this last semester how that little like speech affected me and like how it's been this like burning thing for me since she was like giving me that pep talk. And she cried, which was not what I was expecting, but was so touching. Like, that's the kind of relationship I've been able to build with people at Purdue Fort Wayne, and in particular with the history department. And I will sing their praises for the rest of my life. It's been an amazing experience.
As somebody who has a chronic illness that compromises your immune system and has affected your respiratory system in the past, I know that all of this has impacted you personally more than many people. How was it for you when you first started hearing about COVID-19 mm-hmm. and the need for social distancing?
At first, I didn't know how seriously to take it, which I think a lot of us were sitting around that, like how seriously do we take this? But the History Club had received funding this semester to go to Washington, D.C. for spring break, which is right around the time everything really started heating up. And it turned out that like the weekend before we were supposed to leave, DC was getting their first positive results for COVID. And having done the reading that showed how it can like really come down hard on people who have underlying conditions, I made the decision to stay home and not go on that trip. It just seemed really foolish to go through multiple airports and then someplace where like people from all over the world come for vacations and stuff, especially around spring break time. I think that was the first time where it started to feel really real. And since then, our family's been pretty isolated. Like, we go to the grocery store if we have to, and only if we can't get stuff delivered with our groceries, and we go out on bike rides and walks and stuff. But other than that, like, I think we're doing what so many other people are, constantly washing our hands and hand sanitizer and just all of the things to try to make sure that we stay as safe as possible. And I mean, as weird as this might seem, I forget frequently that I have an underlying health condition. So I think of other people with underlying health conditions and like what I would want for them. And then I remember that that's what I have to do for myself too. So I think it's just put an extra layer of cautiousness, which I think is appropriate right now around
Absolutely.
Our family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm personally extremely grateful that you have taken those extra precautions. So in addition to being a student in the midst of all of this, you also have Arthur, who is your very rambunctious 5-year-old.
Oh my God, is he ever. Yep.
How was the transition to having Arthur home from Southwest Montessori?
Do you want me to be real honest here?
Absolutely. As honest as you feel like comfortable being on the air.
I'm usually really comfortable. I stand by the things I say. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. As selfish as it sounds, I've been really intentional about how I've built my time around my education. There is a goal for me that comes along with my education that is huge, and that is for my family. And so there are sacrifices that our family makes in order to achieve those goals. And this being my last semester, I had my senior sem, which is your capstone class that you take. It's an extra long research paper that's been a delight to research, but a lot of hard work. And then I also had two other 300 level history courses to take. And for people who aren't familiar with what it's like to be a history major, like most people kind of are like, oh, you're a history major, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you have no idea how much work it is to be a history major. Our professors are tough. They require a lot from us, and I love them for it. But trying to work on anything and take care of Arthur and have my husband at home and my other son at home too, like, it was a bit of a nightmare for the first few weeks, easy. Yeah.
And I know that you're not the only person who has been going through that. It's been so hard for so many parents. I feel a lot for everybody who's going through this, people who are single, people who are stuck at home with roommates that they don't know very well, people who are in bad situations.
Yep.
And I feel a lot for parents who are suddenly having to work and take care of kids and figure out how to navigate all of the emotions and fear that are going on mm-hmm. with what's happening right now.
And there are a lot of emotions.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know that we've been going through a similar sort of adjustment in my household. Yeah. And so have so many other people. And that is in no way meant to minimize what you're going through or what you've had to face, because it's been a lot for so many people.
Yes. And I think that's it, is like so often we want to be like, oh, it's okay. Like everything's okay. I got this. And like, it's great to have that mentality, but it's also okay to admit when it's been really hard. Like, there is no need to pretend to be tough around this, because there was no way to get ready for it. And there are a lot of things that go into the adjustments that we've all had to make right now. And like, if anything, I really like, one of the reasons why I still want to keep doing this is that I think we need to hear about it. I think we need the solidarity behind knowing you're not alone in your struggle and that it's real. Yeah. So nightmare. It was a nightmare. to wrap that up, it was awful.
Now, you've told me a bit how wonderful Southwest Montessori has been through this transition. Would you share with our listeners a little bit about how Arthur's school has continued to support both him and your family?
I would love to. They are the best. They are the best. We were so fortunate to have Arthur at Southwest Montessori Academy. Like, our family is better because of them. But what they did so quickly was establish an online routine for the children, which helped the parents tremendously. So Arthur has, it's the cutest, he has a Zoom meeting with all of the children from his classroom at 11:30. They do community time and they all hang out. They get to say hi to each other and the teachers direct them. And then he has a one-on-one with his teacher every day, and then another community time, and then a story time. And it gives us structure around our day, and it gives us these little pockets of time where we know Arthur's going to be consumed with something other than us. Because right now, his interaction is us. Like, we are the only people he is seeing are the people inside his house and his friends on a video screen. And children need so much more interaction than that. And we, like, trying to work, trying to get school stuff done, we don't get the time with him that we would like to have for him. We have to manage that. And so Southwest is like that tool, like just offering those Zoom meetings, but then also having like printouts and stuff. They've done car lines where like the teachers stand outside the school and the kids come through in their cars and they wave and they say hi and they like hold up signs and everything. And like, they are seriously the best little school we ever could have asked for.
How has it been for your family to be homeschooling with Arthur? Has that been something that you've been doing much of?
We try as much as possible. As you mentioned, he is a really high energy kid. He does not sit still without a lot of encouragement and direction and routine. And he doesn't have those things right now. Like, he doesn't, we've tried to establish a routine for him, and we've definitely like cut down on his school day so it's not quite so long. And he's only doing Monday through Thursday with Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, which is a nice break for us as parents and a break for him and a break for his teachers. I think one of the best things we found was Khan Academy Kids, the app. It's brilliant. It's designed for like several age levels, and it helps him with reading, matching, phonics, letters, numbers, like the whole thing. And he interacts with it. in a really satisfying way that we have a hard time getting him to sit down and interact with anything else. So that has been hard, but I think we're making progress.
And for those of you interested in exploring that app yourselves, we'll make sure that there's a link to it in our show notes.
Oh, it's so good. I highly recommend it.
How has it been for Arthur?
He goes back and forth. Some days I feel like he's losing his little mind and I don't blame him. But I think he's adapting well. It's interesting to hear him talk about things. Like now he'll say stuff like, can we do this? I mean, when COVID is over, you know, like, I don't know. I know, right? It just, I think it's helped us kind of flip and focus on him more in a really positive way. But he really misses his friends and he really misses hanging out with people. Today, after community time, he was saying goodbye to Miss Corinne, who is also one of the most lovely human beings I've ever met and one of his teachers. And he goes, goodbye, I'll miss you. And it was precious. And it just like, it kind of like hits home. We can't just be thinking about how much this is impacting us, like what it's doing to our poor children and what they're going through. I sometimes feel like that gets a little lost in what you hear on news and everything. Like, I don't think that we're thinking as much about the impact on our children as we could or should be. So we're doing the best we can. We're setting up video chats with his friends and they play Legos like through video chats and whatnot. But like, he's ready for a dart gun battle. He isn't picking out things on Amazon and wants to have a big Nerf gun battle at some point. So,
oh, I look forward to that.
Me too. He's already picked out a crossbow for me and a vest. Pretty stoked about the crossbow. Yeah.
What would you say are some of the biggest challenges you've overcome as you've adapted to social distancing and these unusual circumstances?
I feel as far as challenges, the hardest thing is feeling like I'm not accomplishing what I was meant to accomplish during this time period. So when Dr. Lipschitz was like, you need to kick butt, I took her really seriously and I'm an overachiever. And so, not to like toot my own horn or anything, but I have a really good reputation with my department. I've worked really hard. I've made some really solid connections. I won Best Paper Award, which the chair of my department and I talked about today. It turns out like it's kind of a big deal to get that award. Like that made me feel really good. I also won the award for achievements in public history for the department, which he said they probably should have renamed to super duper achievements in public history for all of the work that I've done, which was flattering and sweet and also true. This was supposed to be the time to celebrate doing this with my friends. And I'm still not over that.
It's not fair.
It's
that you're not getting to celebrate it and that you're not getting the experience of being celebrated for what you've accomplished after 15 years.
Heck yeah. I mean, I don't frequently go out of my way to like have people pay attention to me or do anything. Like I have very specific reasons for doing what I did. And it wasn't necessarily that I wanted everybody to celebrate me, but once it got to a point where it was like, hey, I'm celebratory worthy, let's do this, it was like, nope. And so that's been not being around my friends all the time, not being on campus. This is so silly. I miss my little tiny table that I used to sit at the library like 5 days a week, easy. Like just being in that environment and having it just so quickly ripped away.
I think that one of the things that people aren't talking about enough is the fact that there is grieving.
Yes.
In what has happened.
Yeah.
And that for many of us, we've really lost things. even if we don't know a single person that actually got COVID-19.
Yeah, and I agree.
Your grief is valid.
Thanks. And sometimes I feel like it's a little silly.
No, this is exactly why I wanted to have you on the show and why I wanted to take an episode to celebrate and honor the people who have been affected by the shift in education.
Thank you. I love you.
I love you too.
So that challenge in particular has been really hard for me. I miss so much of what was supposed to happen. And I think you're right. Like the fact that there is grieving that's happening for the lives we were supposed to be living right now. And I think it's really hard for us to acknowledge that a lot of the time, and like to let people know that it is valid, I think is really important, because as we said earlier, there are so many emotions right now.
So in the midst of all of this grief and sadness, what have been your silver linings?
So my big silver lining is an announcement that we haven't made yet, and I have been holding on to it for months, since the end of winter break, actually. I was accepted to the University of Glasgow for their world-renowned museum studies program. And I know this can't go on air, but yeah. That was, getting into the University of Glasgow has been my goal, my laser focused goal for over 2 years. And I just want to live in Scotland and romp around in the Highlands. Arthur's already started packing. He's chosen backpacks that will go on the plane with him and on the bottom of the plane, because they'll be too big for him to take with him. So he's getting like prepped and ready for that, which I think is, it's really motivation for me, because for a minute, I really felt like what I had worked for might not actually happen. But thankfully, I had deferred my entry to the school to start fall 2021 instead of fall 2020. And so I at least have like a little over a year to get ready for this. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to have a conversation with me, Tracy.
Oh my gosh.
It's really lovely actually getting to have our listeners get to know you a little bit, because you have been as much of a creator of this project as I have.
Thank you. I've loved working on it with you. So thank you, really.